I've been in here too long. Festival colors.
If you got what it takes, cause I'm Curtis Blow, and I want you to know that these are the breaks.
This is Doug Gillard of Guided by Voices, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You've tuned in to All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network, network.
On air, in air, waves
controlled.
On air, in air, channel
connection.
And the moon turns to blood.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Amy Rigby of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. I'm Philip Grant. Amelia Teasdale is reporting for the Columbia paper. The Chatham Village Board is moving forward with its $1.09 million 2020-2021 budget despite the inability to meet in person and the postponement of village elections. Village budgets are effective June 1st and must be submitted to the state in April. The board conducted budget workshops on April 9th and 13th and held a public hearing on the spending plan April 15th. The board will meet again April 29th to vote on the budget. At the April 13th budget workshop, Mayor John Houn and Treasurer Robert Patterson said the biggest unknown on the revenue side is sales tax, and that could mean $100,000 less than they have projected. Howe lauded village department heads for their efforts making cuts in their departments and calling it a, and I quote, bare bones, end quote, budget. The mayor suggested the $10,500 the board gives to the Morris Memorial every year for youth programs could be cut. He said there were actually some question about the legality of awarding the money to the Morris because it is not a village program. All five board members agreed to cut support to the Morris program, choosing to spend the money on the Department of Public Works, Police and Fire Department instead. Pointing out the board can revisit the budget in coming months if revenue changes, Howe said, and I quote, we're going into the unknown, end quote. And you can read the full story in the Columbia paper. Rachel Silverstein is reporting for the Times Union. More area colleges have announced plans to furlough staff. Siena College in Loudonville and Skidmore College in Saratoga Springs have announced faculty and staff furloughs and other cost-saving measures to address an immediate budget gap created by the COVID-19 pandemic and the loss of room and board revenue since campuses have gone remote. Siena College will return about $8.7 million to students in dining and housing refunds and credits, which is roughly 36% of the school's annual revenue. Siena President Margaret E. Madden In a memo to students, parents, and staff, April 22nd, called the decision to furlough 75 employees beginning May 1st difficult, but, and I quote, physically unavoidable, end quote. Skidmore is facing a $4.5 million financial hit from room and board reimbursements alone. Skidmore President Philip A. Glotzbach wrote in an email to the Skidmore community, and I quote, "The cancellation of our summer programs and events means the additional loss of budgeted income of more than $2 million, and our endowment is currently down more than 10%, end quote. The 2,600-student school is expected to receive $1.6 million in stimulus funds. Half of that amount is to be used for student grants. The College of St. Rose in Albany last week announced furloughs and temporary pay cuts to address a budget deficit. Federal CARES Act relief funds are expected to cover only half of the $3.1 million in losses related to room and board reimbursements. Union College in Schenectady has furloughed 274 employees to offset a $7 million financial shortfall caused by the cancellation of on-campus instruction during the health crisis. Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute this week began notifying 280 employees that they would be furloughed from May 1st through July 31st. The school, which serves nearly 8,000 students, will receive $4.8 million in relief aid from the Federal CARES Act. And you can read the full story in the Times Union. Morgan Macias is reporting for State of Politics. Governor Andrew Cuomo is warning of major cuts to schools, hospitals, and local governments in the wake of the federal government's failure to provide direct funding for the state in its stimulus bills. Stephen Aquario, executive director of the New York State Association of Counties, says local governments do not have the resources to deal with any cuts to funding. Aquario explained, and I quote, "It's unsustainable. It would devastate local governments," end quote. Cuts to local governments would mean layoffs to the workforce and postponing road construction projects. Aquario said, and I quote, "We're going to have to lay off workers. No one wants to lay off workers," end quote. In addition, there is a state law that requires local governments to make school districts whole on delinquent property taxes. This is money, Aquario says, that local governments just do not have right now. Aquario explained, and I quote, "We've asked the governor if he could suspend that law and give us a little bit more time to make those payments to school districts. This is a very serious issue, a very serious cash flow problem," end quote. Aquario says local governments are doing their best to prepare for the funding cuts. Read the full story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, and COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Jeanette Wolfberg is reporting for the Columbia paper. The Hudson Farmers Market will open at 9 a.m. on Saturday, April 25th. Virginia Ambrose, the market's manager, said last week. Ambrose expects 27 vendors to participate. To address social distancing requirements, the market is relocating to two locations, the city parking lot between 6th and 5th Streets on Columbia Street and the municipal lot on 6th and Columbia Streets. The move will allow for more space between vendors. Ambrose said the vendors will have gloves, masks, and hand sanitizers, and there will be hand washing stations as well. The community tent, the craft tent, and music have been, and I quote, "temporarily set aside, but they will return, don't worry," end quote. Hudson is the largest farmers market in Columbia County. Other markets are located in Chatham, Copaig, Germantown, Kinderhook, Lebanon Valley, and Philmont. Each market is managed independently. And you can read the full story in the Columbia paper. Larry Rulison is reporting for the Times Union. Trustco Bank has created a special short-term loan program for customers running short on cash during the coronavirus pandemic. The bank announced April 21st it is offering short-term personal loans of up to $5,000 as part of a special COVID-19 financial relief program. program will also help customers modify or defer consumer and commercial loans if needed. Trustco is also working with the U.S. Small Business Administration to offer loans to small businesses through the Paycheck Protection Program. Trustco has also created a COVID-19 fund that will donate time and financial support to organizations dealing with the pandemic. The bank's parent company recently revealed its quarterly earnings have declined more than $1 million since last year. Trustco is the region's largest bank, with 148 offices in New York, New Jersey, Vermont, Massachusetts, and Florida. And you can read the full story in the Times Union. Stephen Sawchuk and Sarah D. Sparks are reporting for Education Week. Test scores released April 23rd show the nation's eighth graders' grasp of topics in history and geography have plummeted. Scores fell among nearly all grade 8 students in history on the National Assessment of Educational Progress, also called the nation's report card, since the last history exam was administered in 2014. The decline of 4 points overall erased fully half of the overall gains made in the subject since 1994, the first year the exam was given. Federal officials described themselves as, and I quote, disappointed, end quote, and the results as, and I quote, pervasive, end quote, and I quote, disturbing, end quote. Scores fell in geography as well. The overall decline of 3 points since 2014 was due to a downturn in the performance of the lowest performing students. In civics, the third subject tested, scores remained flat. Since the first civics exam was given in 1998, scores in that assessment have increased by only 3 points. U.S. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos called the results, and I quote, stark and inexcusable, end quote. She said, and I quote, in the real world, this means students don't know what the Lincoln-Douglas debates were about, nor can they discuss the significance of the Bill of Rights or point out basic locations on a map, end quote. Read the full story in Education Week. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, and COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Antonio Delgado, the Democrat from Rhinebeck, currently representing the 19th Congressional District in Congress, released a statement April 22nd mostly praising the Senate coronavirus relief bill the Senate passed, but wondering why funding for state and local governments was kept out, and wondering why Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was suggesting states declare bankruptcy instead.
Just want to check in real quick and comment on the fact that here we are about to vote this week in the House on another relief package that just passed the Senate. It pluses up the Paycheck Protection Program as well as the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, provides funding for our hospitals and funding for testing, all good things. It does not, however, provide more funding for our state and local governments, which is of critical importance. We have a lot of folks on the front lines, our police officers, firefighters, teachers, providing essential services to folks, and doing so despite the fact that our counties, our municipalities are woefully short when it comes to their revenues. And we're being told that we're going to be focusing on this in the next package. I look forward to that. But then I hear Senator McConnell say that states should actually just consider filing for bankruptcy rather than seeking out aid from the government. You got to be kidding me, man. You must be out of your mind. To be able to fix your lips to say something like that at this juncture, to say it kindly is unproductive. But actually, it's reckless, and it's disgraceful. And it reveals how far removed you are from the realities on the ground, where people across the political spectrum are rallying around each other, putting their countrymen first, and doing everything they can to lift each other's spirits up. We could be so much better than this. We must be better than this. I look forward to continuing to work on this very important issue, and I look forward to it being included in the next package.
That was Antonio Delgado, the representative from the 19th Congressional District. He'll hold an online town hall meeting at 4:30 p.m. Friday, April 24th, and WGXC will broadcast it live on 90.7 FM.
Hello, and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, April 23rd. We start out just below freezing early this morning. The weather system on its way has taken its time and is now due after dark, giving us another chance to go outside. A sunny morning helps heat things up to 50 degrees by 2 p.m. Does not hang out there long, and temperatures begin to slide downward before dark. After the sun goes down, this rain will show up, light at first and growing in strength overnight, peaking tomorrow morning. Lows in the upper 30s coupled with the rain presents the chance for hypothermia. Temperatures rise a bit to the mid 40s as the rain weakens through the day, ending around dark. As it looks now, Saturday will be the nice day to get outside and Sunday will be wet. If you need to get things done outside in dry weather, take advantage of all the days that you can. This season is fixing to be generally wetter and warmer than usual. Pollen levels will be low today and tomorrow and will spike significantly on Saturday. The next high tides will be at 4:16 p.m. and tomorrow at 4:20 a.m. The next low tides will be at 10:35 a.m. and at 10:36 p.m. Water temperature slides back to a max of 45 degrees today. Sunset today will be at 7:26 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:01 a.m. Looking way up, we see not nearly as much as we would like due to SpaceX's Starlink satellite constellation, which continues to anger and frustrate amateur astronomers across the globe. With only 360 satellites launched so far and more than 11,000 left to launch, things are only going to get worse. Solar wind speed is currently 417 kilometers per second at 6 protons per milliliter. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2. Quiet. There have been 18 days since the last sunspot, and this has been the Better Weather brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Hello, I'm Pamela Badilla of Jata Jata International Folkloric Theater, and you are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra, Catskill, Hudson, Greenport, Claverack, Kinderhook, so many towns and villages and cities in Columbia and Greene County. This is listener-supported hands-on radio.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Mashuda. I'm 18 years old, and I'm from Hudson High School.
I am Lena. I am nine. I go to school at MCS. Elementary school, maybe? I don't know. They changed it.
So confusing.
Yeah.
And who else have we got here?
Me!
Me!
Hi, my name is AJ. I go to school, well, I did go to school at Leavery, and I am 9 years old, and I live in Elizaville.
Woo! And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
And bookish things!
It's true. Our friend Amelia usually says a lot of that, and she's not here today, and we miss her. But hopefully she'll be able to join us next week, and hopefully she's reading lots of good books. and maybe writing them too, because she writes a lot.
Speaking of books, can I share one?
Sure.
So, this is a true story called The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind, Creating Currents of Electricity and Hope, with two authors, by the way. Here's the back. William Kamwamba was born in Malawi, a country where magic ruled and modern science was mystery. It was also a land withered by drought and hunger. But William had read about windmills and he dreamed of building one that would bring to a small village a set of luxuries that only 2% of Malawians could enjoy: electricity and running water. His neighbors called him Masala, crazy, but William refused to let go of his dreams. With a small pile of once-forgotten textbooks, some scrap metal, tractor parts, and bicycle halves, and an armory of curiosity and determination, he embarked on a daring plan to forge an unlucky contraption and small miracle that would change the lives around him. The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind is a remarkable true story about human inventiveness and his power to overcome crippling adversity. It will inspire anyone who doubts the power of one's individual ability to change his community and better the lives of those around him.
Great. Are you enjoying it?
A lot.
And what inspired you to pick up this book?
Well, it's actually a school project, but I feel like I chose it myself. It's like one of the books that I really love.
I know that story has been told in different forms, and it's by the person, right?
Yeah, by William Kambawaka and Brian Mueller.
Oh, okay. That's nice. I still need to read that someday. It sounds really good.
Really good.
I've read the picture book version.
There's a picture book version?
There's at least one. I think there might be more than one. It's a very nice story.
Is it a long picture book?
I mean, I guess for a picture book, maybe. It's not too long. That's cool. I'm glad you're enjoying it. So we also have another co-host that just joined us. Fahim is here.
Hello, I'm Fahim. I'm 15 years old and I'm also from Hudson.
Great. Glad you could join us today. We're talking about books and stuff, as usual. Who would like to talk about a book next?
I mean, I can go.
Okay.
So in school, I wrote two poems, which I would like to share today.
Great, go for it.
Okay. Roses are blue, violets are green. You're a mellow who made me a shallow. You can't be here because I'm here. You think you're so perfect, making me so imperfect. You don't even show up in my dreams. Whenever I think about you, you never come. I don't even care anymore. Get out. Oh, last gardens of Helgen pineapple. You think you're too precious, but guess what? I can find myself another inexpensive pineapple.
Aw. Inexpensive pineapple.
So in my English class, Miss Neer told us to write about a fruit, and I got the pineapple, so I wrote that.
Oh, you got assigned the fruit? You didn't get to Were you hoping for a certain fruit?
I mean, I was thinking maybe I could get mango or something, but then pineapple worked somehow.
That's interesting.
And I have another one.
Great.
Evil, do you know me? My name is Lucifer. All my life I did good. Now I'm not my own. No one recognizes me anymore. I don't know what to do anymore. Hell, please embrace me. I don't want to be here anymore. So I don't know. I just wrote it because I don't know. I'm into supernatural stuff. And in class, we were talking about horror stuff. And we were talking about the Lucifer, the Lucifer TV show. Yeah, and we were deciding I think his name is Tom, who plays the Lucifer character better. We were comparing him to another character. So in class, basically we fought Miss Neer. A lot of people were saying that the Lucifer guy is handsome than the other character. And so,
I haven't watched Lucifer, but I like the actor from that. I saw him in a comedy series, I think called Miranda. That's a British comedy series where he was the love interest. And so I like him from that show. So whenever I see previews for Lucifer, I'm like, oh, it's that guy. But it's a totally different character.
I think his name is Tom something. I don't know his last name.
Yeah, sounds right. Cool. Thanks for sharing your poems. It's very nice. I like hearing everybody's writing.
Thank you.
So, Fahim, do you have anything you wanted to talk about today?
Yeah, I have a book. I'm pretty sure it has been presented many times throughout the year in Bound by Books. Mm-hmm. It's one of the yearly books that you have to read. It's called Lord of the Flies by William Golding. So I haven't finished it yet, but this book is about a bunch of kids like 8 to 12 year old kids, even younger, who get surrounded like an island, and it's like a mysterious island. They have to figure out how to survive. It was during like a war. I don't know. I don't remember if it was a World War One or two, one of those two. And then they were like, they couldn't get help or anything. They were surrounded in the island, and they have to figure out. And then they're like, process of being a savage or being like, it's like a peaceful community or something like that. So like their goal is to make sure that they don't get savage, that they don't become savages. But like later on, some of them do. And then like, I haven't finished the whole book, so I don't know the whole thing, but like that's basically what it's about. It's them trying to survive in the island.
What grade are you in?
10th grade.
10th grade, okay. I think I read that in 9th grade in high school. Yeah, that's one of the few books that I remember, like what grade I was in when I read it, unless I'm remembering wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was 9th grade. I really liked that one. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah. I don't want to spoil anything, but they do get savage. Like, I think like, you know, 3 characters die like horribly.
Oh no. Yeah, it's hard to talk about it without spoiling, but yeah, I think a lot of schools, teachers use it to talk about human nature. Yeah, that's what I remember from it at least. Yeah. But I haven't read that since high school. There's some books that I really liked in high school that I've reread as an adult, and that one I haven't tried again. I wonder if I'd like it now.
Have you ever read like Perfect Peace by like Daniel, I forgot his last name.
No. I read a separate piece. Is it that?
Yeah,
I've never heard of Perfect Peace.
I mean, it's a really good book. I'm just gonna say, like, her mother, you know, she always wanted a daughter, but like all she had was a son, and she does something to that baby, you know. That's all I'm just gonna say. But it's interesting, like, how, you know, your nature versus nurture, like, even if you have a different gender, and if you're nurtured like that, if you're raised like a certain gender, you know, it's really hard for you to, you know, reverse it.
I actually recently read a book that Fahim read for school once and talked about on the show called Allegedly by Tiffany Jackson. Yeah, I finally read that. She was supposed to be coming to the book fest this year, so I was like, oh, I should finally read that book that Fahim suggested. But now she's not coming because the book fest got canceled this year. Yeah, sadly, because can't have gatherings, and the school's closed too through the date. So, but I'm glad I read that. So, thanks for suggesting it, Fahim. So, Lena, do you have anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
Yeah. So we can talk about anything random, right?
Sure. Within reason.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure people know this, but Club Penguin got shut down years back. And then my sister made me play Club Penguin today. And I told her, didn't it get shut down? And she said, yeah, but it got reopened again.
Oh.
And I'm hooked it's actually a pretty good game.
So why was Club Penguin shut down, as far as you know? And what is it about, or what do you do with Club Penguin?
I don't know why it got shut down, but I know that you play as a penguin and you can get money for playing games, and you can buy stuff, like you can decorate your character, you can get a floof, I think is what it's called. I can't remember what it's called, but I'm gonna call it a floof because it literally looks like a ball of hair. And I forgot what else you can do. You can decorate your igloo. Yeah.
Do you interact with people in the game? Like with other friends that are playing?
Yeah, you can, but like the only friend that I have is my sister, and like why should I talk to her in the game when I have her like sitting right next to me?
Oh, that sounds kind of fun.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk to my sister as a penguin.
Yeah. And also, I remember last week that I said that I was going to make a story, and then I forgot, but, like, I didn't honestly know what to make this story about because I have horrible story writing skills, even though I remember writing a pretty good story that got many views.
Well,
but, like, I'm working on it.
Yeah. takes practice.
Yeah, but like I got a couple ideas.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So I could talk about a game too, and a book. I'll briefly talk about a game that I shared with AJ after the show last week. I've been kind of really obsessed with it lately. I do Skype calls with my nephew and niece in Russia, and we play this together. I shared it with them, and they're having fun with it too.
Is it Little Alchemy 2?
Yeah, it's called Little Alchemy 2. So it's littlealchemy2.com.
I found new mixtures.
Can you explain to people what the game is like?
So first you have, I think, earth, water, fire, and air.
Mm-hmm.
And you can need to mix things to create more things, and you have to keep on creating things. And I found a new mixture. So if you do something with dirt, and you add dirt and water, we'll do something with earth first, and then you get dirt, and then you mix dirt and water, it becomes mud, and then mud and mud equals clay. Clay and clay is a brick. Clay and clay is a brick, and brick is a wall, and wall is a house. So I just found out how to make a house, because last time we were wondering how to make a house.
Yeah, it's really fun. And some of the combinations are somewhat based in reality. So at some point you can mix like flour and water and you make dough, or you mix dirt and water and you make mud. And there are things that actually happen in real life. And then other times you mix
magic,
like if you
and
mix
a horse and you get a unicorn.
Yeah, or fish and a bird and you get a flying fish, which isn't actually how a flying fish is made, in case you weren't sure.
Or a bird and fire and you get a phoenix.
Yeah, but it's fun trying to think of what you can make.
And a cow and a fish equals...
I know, it was a cow and the sea, because manatees are sea cows.
A cow in the sea is a manatee.
Yeah, so that's really fun. And it's been fun playing with my niece and nephew, because I introduced it to them and was showing them how it works. And then they've been playing all the time. So they seem to come up with, it's interesting that I'll have all these things that they don't have, and they'll have all these things I don't have. And we're all trying to figure out how to get the things that each other has without spoiling it for each other. So that's really fun. I've been enjoying that game. So that's called littlealchemy2.com. And you can also get the link from the library website. We have it on our online resources. Because it's so fun.
Did you put it there?
I did, but I put it there. I was researching educational games, and I put it on there after just checking it quickly to see what it was like. And then I played a little while. I was like, oh yeah, this is really fun. So highly suggested by both myself, AJ, and my niece and nephew, who are 6 and 9. So the book I wanted to talk about, I haven't been reading as much this month, really. I have some books in progress, but I haven't finished them because I'm reading them pretty slowly. But today I decided I wanted to listen to an old favorite. So I listened to Frog and Toad Together by Arnold Lobel. Have any of you read Frog and Toad, those books? It looks like Lena has. They're very fun. They're easy reader books, so they're meant for kids that are starting to learn how to read but aren't quite ready for chapter books. So they're pretty simple chapter books. And they're really cute and sweet and funny. And they're about two best friends, Frog and Toad. And they just have very simple adventures together. And the first one in Frog and Toad Together is called The List, I believe. And basically, Toad wakes up and he makes a list of all the things he's going to do in a day. And then he's checking them off one by one. And they start with, like, get up, make breakfast. I forget what else. But then he goes to Frog's house, and that's on his list. And then at some point, the list blows away and he doesn't know what to do with himself because he doesn't have his list anymore. And I could really relate to this. I never need a list to know what to do, but I've been really relying on lists during this time while we're closed because my schedule has changed so much. So my idea of my internal mental calendar is not quite what it once was. So I feel like I have to keep track of when I have different meetings and when there's different programs and all the other tasks that I have to do. And so I've been making a list every week. At the start of the week, I make a list for every day of the week where I put down all the programs and activities and webinars and meetings that I have to go to, and then all the other stuff that I want to work on certain days.
And then each day I look at the lists and add to them and move things around. So whatever I don't get to on my Monday list moves to my Tuesday list and so on. And I know a lot of you were talking last week on the radio about how time maintenance is something that you're having to figure out with this change to online learning, remote learning. And just so you know, adults are having the same issues. We're all trying to figure out how to work in this like new environment. And for me, I find that lists are very helpful. So much like Toad and me, perhaps you want to make a list to keep track of all you have to do each day. And I also love making lists where I put down things like have breakfast or get up, or I'll put down something fun like, I want to read my book today. And that helps me remember to read my book.
How about I want to eat some ice cream today, or I want to have some cookie dough today.
That sounds good. I totally approve of putting that on your list. You could even mix them and have cookie dough ice cream.
I was actually going to say that, but then I was like, I said it separately, so I had to go with it.
Yeah, best of both worlds, you know? So does anyone have anything that they're most excited for this week or looking forward to? It could be eating cookie dough ice cream. It could be something else.
It's that my friend Lou has been under quarantine for 2 weeks. And now I can actually go to her house and hug her and stuff like that. It's exciting.
Nice.
To actually be able to hug your friends, someone besides your people and your family, because it gets a little boring.
Yeah, I miss hugging people too. I'm a hugger. I can only hug my husband right now. Luckily, he likes hugging me back, or else I'd be in trouble. Anyone else excited for anything in particular this week? Lena?
I'm not excited for something really special. I'm just excited because I'm going to be helped by my siblings to improve my story writing skills, or at least make a story. But I found two titles that I put together.
What are they?
It's The Corona Kids, or it's Subject 10, and they're both about kids, kind of. Maybe, I don't know.
I hope you have fun with that. That's nice that your siblings are helping.
Yeah, because, like, I have no idea what to do. Because, like, the only thing I know what to do so far is, like, just put them in a facility. But I need to also figure out the characters. Because, like, how can you not know what the characters look like or what their names are if you're putting them in a facility?
I don't know. I bet you'll figure it out.
Yeah, well, sometimes.
I believe in you.
Maybe you
Thank
can just,
you, Emily.
Maybe you can just say, like, for example, if the character's a girl, she did or he did, instead of actually naming.
Oh, well, I like to name my characters, and also the story writing is also for my YouTube channel, so yeah.
Awesome.
Maybe you could just name them at the beginning and then not mention them for the whole rest of the story until the end.
Oh, you're right.
Maybe you can use it for the blurb if you can actually make like a sort of blurb in the description underneath your video.
Okay. Thank you for helping me, AJ.
You're welcome.
Oh, how about Mashuda? Are you excited for anything in particular this week?
Nothing. Like, my teacher assigned me like ton of work since it's Monday. But I have time. It's like doing Wednesday, but still, like, time goes really quick. And I don't know, like, I need to finish my work that I didn't do for 2 weeks because, you know, like you said, it really depends on like keeping track and making a list. So, you know, I start like writing my things on my planner and keeping track of. It's really hard because all the teachers just assign you work and you have like I have 4 classes, but still it feels like so much. And I'm also dealing with senioritis right now. I don't want to do anything.
How about you, Fahim?
I mean, I have nothing to be excited about. Just have a lot of work and everything. So
nothing at all?
Yeah, a lot.
There's nothing that brings you joy anymore?
No, not really.
No.
I really hate this.
What about radio with your friends? What about doing the radio show with your friends?
Oh, no. Of course I like this. It's about only, I'm talking about like homework and everything else. Like, I just don't like that. Like, it's like double than the amount of work we used to get in our school. It's just weird. It's just like something I'm not used to and people are not used to it.
Sure. Well, what I'm excited about, I love this weather. I mean, not the snow that we had the other day or the really rainy day we had last week, but the blue skies and the sunshine and the flowering trees are really nice. Even though we're not supposed to be outside much, it's nice to be able to even just step outside of my house briefly and like feel the sunshine on me and feel nice. And we have a street tree in front of our house that's flowering right now, and that makes me happy. And then I also realized that one of the things that I have a hard time with, which I guess is also related to time management, is that I often forget to take my lunch at a reasonable time. And all of a sudden at like 2 o'clock, I'll realize that I'm feeling hungry and then be like, oh, I should eat something. And it kind of throws everything off. But I realized that my sister's family in Russia likes to Skype or do a Zoom call around the time that I should probably be eating lunch. So I've decided that that's a good time to take a break from work, eat lunch, and talk to my family. So I'm hoping to have many more conversations with them in the coming week. So I did that today. I had a sandwich while talking with them, and it was very nice. Yay. Well, I hope you all have a good week. I hope Fahim finds something to bring him joy this week, as well as the rest of you.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. And we hope all our listeners out there also find something to bring them joy this week and read lots of good books and find ways to connect and engage and learn.
Yay!
And we'll be here next week again to talk about some more books.
Hopefully Amelia will be with us then.
Yeah, we hope so. We missed you, Amelia.
Yeah.
Come back to us. Have a good week and happy reading.
Bye.
We'll be right back. Public News Service Daily Newscast for April the 23rd, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said Wednesday he favors allowing states struggling with high public employee pension costs amid the burdens of the pandemic to declare bankruptcy rather than giving them a federal bailout. That from Bloomberg News. The view came in response to Hugh Hewitt on his syndicated radio show, McConnell saying, "I would certainly be in favor of allowing states to use bankruptcy. It saves some cities, and there's no good reason for it to not be available." Bloomberg reports New Jersey's Governor Phil Murphy, a Democrat, said he was stunned by McConnell's comments, which he called completely and utterly irresponsible. A new epidemiological model says unless jail populations are reduced immediately, the COVID-19 pandemic could claim about 100,000 more American lives, doubling the current projections.
There are almost 740,000 people in American jails where social distancing and other preventative measures are difficult, if not impossible. According to ACLU Chief Analytics Officer Lucia Tien, one person is being incarcerated every 3 seconds.
What that means is that both incarcerated people and also staff go in and out of jails. And when they come in and out of jails, they're also transmitting that disease to the community.
The report says ending the 95% of arrests that, according to the FBI, do not involve violent crime and doubling the rate of release from jail could save 23,000 lives in jail and 76,000 in the broader community. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
It should be noted that new model only addresses jail populations, not immigration detention centers or prisons that bring the total number of people incarcerated to more than 2 million. The coronavirus outbreak has left many Oregonians unemployed, but some businesses there are working to preserve an overlooked group of workers, janitors. Companies such as Nike and Intel have committed to keeping their janitorial staff working and not cutting hours. Noah Martinez is a member of the union SEIU Local 49 and a janitor.
I feel really happy because we continue to work, and not just me, but all of my coworkers in the building.
Janitors are deemed essential workers. Nearly 300,000 Oregonians have filed for unemployment over the last month. With or without COVID-19, children's service workers in Ohio will have to ensure the safety of kids. They're currently balancing protecting children and their own health.
Christy Burry with the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services says responding to reports of child maltreatment already is stressful, traumatic work.
Our kids and families have been hit hard by the opioid epidemic over the last several years. If anything, this is adding a whole other layer to that, and they need all of the support that they can get.
The department issued guidance early on in the pandemic to help county agencies prioritize the most essential duties. Mary Sherman reporting.
This is PMS. Data from health departments in various parts of the country show that black people are disproportionately affected by the new coronavirus. Mike Moen tells us some of the numbers are reflected in Minnesota. Experts say long-standing equality issues are at play.
University of Minnesota sociology professor Elizabeth Wrigley Field has researched racial inequalities in infectious diseases. She says there are two things that usually factor into how a person catches a virus: exposure and your body's resistance to that exposure. She says for the current pandemic, minorities are faced with several situations of high exposure.
Working in jobs that are considered essential, being asked to work without proper protection. It means riding crowded public transportation to jobs. It means also living in crowded circumstances.
And she says minorities often struggle with underlying health issues, making it harder to fight off a virus, leading to higher mortality rates.
As for COVID-19, Minnesota officials say blacks represent 13% of infections but make up less than 7% of the state's population. A coalition of wildlife advocacy groups has filed a lawsuit this week charging the U.S. Forest Service of continuing to grant feeding permits without adequate environmental analysis.
Conservation groups are doubling down on efforts to get federal agencies to stop controversial winter feeding of elk at the Alkali Creek Feed Ground in the Grovant Drainage, Dell Creek Feed Ground in Sublette County, and Forest Park Feed Ground in Lincoln County. Kristen Combs with Wyoming Wildlife Advocates says chronic wasting disease surrounds all three operations, and she hopes the courts will put a stop to a practice she believes puts entire herds at risk.
once a disease like chronic wasting disease gets into these feed grounds, the chance of spread just increases exponentially when you have high densities of elk in one location.
I'm Eric Galatis.
Finally, our Eric Tegadoff tells us Washington State's wolf population on the rise, according to a new count, but conservation groups say the species still has a long road to recovery.
Wolf numbers increased to at least 145 in 2019, up from 126 in 2018. Zoe Hanley with Defenders of Wildlife says that's good news, but wolves aren't out of the woods yet. She says one concerning point in the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife's report is that 9 wolves were removed because of their interactions with livestock or livestock depredation, and most conflicts occurred on public lands.
It's disappointing to see lethal removal in the same locations every year. Wolves should have the right of way on our public lands.
Wolves remain sparse in the western part of Washington, where they are federally listed as endangered. Please do try to keep a safe distance as you go about your day. This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.
Hi, Taina. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. A lot changed since you came to visit us at WOOC Studios. Now we are working remotely. So what's going on with you?
Oh, so many things. A lot has changed. Mostly the biggest thing is that I'm home full time now, with my children. So I have 2 children. I have a 8-year-old and I have a 16-year-old. And so I'm doing a lot of homeschooling and figuring out how to continue my work as an artist for social change in the midst of these times, which is not something that I have perfectly figured out yet. And I'm sure we'll talk about more as we go along today, but just working through that, using my voice and my work as an activist to contribute whatever I can to supporting those I love and also everyone in my community and world that's struggling and suffering right now.
Yes, we live in tough times for everybody. And I'm sure it's a handful to be now homeschooling, which I'm sure is something new for you, and trying to be there for every of the aspects that you had in your life and be present in the middle of all these tragic moments that we're experiencing. It's tough.
It's really tough. I would say that, like, every moment is different. So, like, even hour by hour, I have varying emotions of feeling deep sadness, despair, anger, and moments of hope and joy, reclamation of joy, connectedness with my family and those that I love, connectedness with nature, cleaning like my home, right? And also cleaning myself mentally, physically, spiritually, just being able to kind of go within and work on some stuff. And then just like ping-ponging between that and fear of, you know, what's going to happen with some of these folks in my life that are sick, or, you know, with my career, or this world, you know, just like what's next for our lives. But I think exactly what you just said of being in the present moment has really helped me. So I've been leaning a lot into meditation, and prayer have been my like saving grace to help me through these times. Doing a lot of yoga, a lot of meditation, a lot of sitting with my ancestors' altar and praying. And that's really given me a lot of peace, which is necessary right now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally understand you. Trying to make the best of it.
Yeah.
Year ago, actually, yesterday, you released your latest album, Resiliencia. I couldn't believe it yesterday. I know that we were talking yesterday, and unfortunately we couldn't get together. But then I when I saw the date, I realized that was the day that you released your album, April 19th.
I didn't even put that together. Thank you for doing that.
Talk about a little bit about the resiliencia.
So I have always been inspired by the women of color in my life. And I had a residency at the Art Center of the Capital Region. And through that residency, I had an opportunity to dig deeper and to interview some of those people in my community, my local community, but also my larger worldwide community that I've gathered as decades-long traveling artist, and interview these folks and ask them to share with me their teachings of resilience. So some of those stories look like, you know, surviving breast cancer, surviving immigration journeys, surviving sexual assault, surviving body hatred. And also during that time period that I was working on the album, Hurricanes Irma Maria hit Puerto Rico, and that became a whole nother journey on the album. So I went to Puerto Rico about 4 months after Maria and interviewed 4 women artists and activists there. And so with all of these stories, I turned them into songs, and also some of them into what I call music video documentaries that allow people a deeper view into the stories behind the songs. And, you know, I'm so glad that you brought this topic up to me, because absolutely 150%, I am leaning into those songs right now and into those teachings right now. Like, I want to rewatch my own Resiliencia documentary because, and I hope to soon do a screening in our local community, because there is so much to learn from what happened in Puerto Rico, what's happening in Puerto Rico right now, especially after the earthquakes, and also after the uprisings in Puerto Rico to call out the corruption in the government and in the U.S. government, and to, you know, these movements, these powerful grassroots movements that are basically, in my opinion, just taking a whole new direction of what it means to be independent and sovereign, like food, food justice movements and holistic health movements and artistic movements and, you know, so on and so forth. Oh, renewable energy movements, like all of these things, you know, just really doing some powerful transformative stuff in Puerto Rico. I was in Puerto Rico during the earthquakes as they began in this winter. And so, you know, it's just been on my mind, like, what am I learning and what can I bring with me into today? So
I have your album, and Resiliencia is one of the songs that I play. Because in this moment in my life, I need something to keep me going. And everybody is seeing or suffering. So I play your album and it gives me hope. Mm-hmm. Along with the We Are Rising. I know the song is part of the 1 Billion Rising movement to end violence against women and gender bias violence. But that's another inspiration that, for me, I play it nonstop. Aww. Because I want to believe that we are going to be rising from this.
Thank you. Did you know, have you heard the Spanish version? I don't know if you got to hear that.
Of course I have. Yes, I have.
Yeah.
I have a lot of favorites from your songs. No Es Mi Presidente is one of my favorite songs in the whole world, but let's not touch that subject.
Thank you. No, you know, it's thank you. Thank you for saying